Alethi Glyphs, page 1. My friend, the secrets uncovered infiltrating the Calligrapher's Guild are more mundane than expected. I prefer bloodstains to inkstains any day, so next time send me somewhere I'm more likely to die from wounds than from hand cramps. By purities, if you ask me to draw another glyph... The darkest secret of the guild is that the phonemes within a glyph can sometimes be deciphered. Sorry to shatter your theories of dark rites and ancient moon dances, but glyphs aren't pronounced or read. They're memorized, and they change over time till the original collection of phonograms is almost unrecognizable. Take, for instance, the glyph for storm, Zerus. High, Ketcha. High storm, Kazeris. Eternal, Kalad. Everstorm, Kalazeris. Contrast Zerus with a glyph in its infancy, Zatalef, a bat-like cephalopod the Alethi hadn't encountered until their recent conquests in Akak. The glyph's phonemes are apparent as well as the glyph's resemblance to the actual creature. Glyphs have simplified versions for small writing. Glyph pairs are slightly more common than single glyphs. Less used are three glyphs in a row. Even older than Zerus are the glyphs used in the first Oath of the Knights Radiant. Yavani Tebel Tzameth, Katav Tebel Kadalak, Melak Tebel Maviz. These resemble more the complex, unreadable glyphs representing the orders of knights than they do any middle or modern Alethi glyphs. I suspect these were borrowed from an earlier source and incorporated into an already developing Alethi glyph lexicon. This supports the claim that Alethi glyphs were adopted from older scripts likely descended from Dawn Chant, and might explain the two sets of phonemes used in glyph creation, standard and calligraphic. Glyph makers use both, the phonemes rotated, flipped, and distorted, to fit the calligrapher's vision. Next page, the calligraphic phoneme set.
53. Such a twisted cut. Friend, your letter is most intriguing, even revelatory. The ancient Silm dynasty in Yakeved had been founded after the death of King Nanchet. No contemporary accounts survived. The best they had dated from 2 centuries later. The author of that text, Natata Ved, often called Oil Eyes by her contemporaries, insisted that her methods were rigorous, although by modern standards, historical scholarship had been in its infancy. Yasna had long been interested in Nanchet's death because he'd ruled for only 3 months. He'd succeeded to the throne when the previous king, his brother Nanhar, had taken ill and died while on campaign in what would become modern Triax. Remarkably, during the brief span of his reign, Nanchet survived 6 assassination attempts. The first had come from his sister, who had wanted to place her husband on the throne. After surviving poisoning, Nanchet had put them both to death. Soon after, their son had tried to kill him in his bed. Nanchet, apparently a light sleeper, struck down his nephew with his own sword. Nanchet's cousin tried next. That attack left Nanchet blinded in one eye, and was followed by another brother, an uncle, and finally Nanchet's own son. At the end of 3 exasperating months, according to Oil Eyes, the great but weary Nanchet called for an accounting of all his household. He gathered them together at a grand feast, promising the delights of distant Eomia. Instead, when all were assembled, Nanchet had them executed one by one. Their bodies were burned in a grand pyre, upon which was cooked the meat for the feast that he ate alone at a table set for 200. Natata Oil Eyes was known to have had a passion for the dramatic. The text sounded almost delighted when she'd explained how he'd died by choking on the food at that very feast, alone, with nobody to help him. Similar tales repeated themselves throughout the long history of the Vorin lands. Kings fell, and their brothers or sons took the throne. Even a pretender of no true lineage would usually claim kinship through oblique and creative genealogical justifications. Yasna was simultaneously fascinated and worried by these accounts. Thoughts about them were unusually present in her mind as she made her way into Urethiru's basement. Something in her readings the night before had lodged this particular story in her brain. She soon peeked into the former library beneath Urethiru. Both rooms, one on either side of the hallway that led to the crystal pillar, were filled with scholars now, occupying tables carried down by squads of soldiers. Dalinar had sent expeditions down the tunnel the Unmade had used to flee. The scouts reported a long network of caverns. Following a stream of water, they'd marched for days, and eventually located an exit into the mountain foothills of Tufalia. It was nice to know that, in a pinch, there was another way out of Urethiru, and a potential means of supply, other than through the Oath Gates. They maintained guards in the upper tunnels, and for now it seemed safe enough in the basement. Therefore, Navani had transformed the area into a scholarly institute designed to solve Dalinar's problems and to provide an edge in information, technology, and pure research. Concentration spren rippled in the air like waves overhead, a rarity in Alethkar, but common here, and logic spren darted through them like tiny storm clouds. Yasna couldn't help but smile. For over a decade, she'd dreamed of uniting the best minds of the kingdom in a coordinated effort. She'd been ignored. All anyone had wanted to discuss was her lack of belief in their god. Well, they were focused now. Turned out that the end of the world had to actually arrive before people would take it seriously. Renarin was there, standing near the corner, watching the work. He'd been joining the scholars with some regularity, but he still wore his uniform with the Bridge 4 patch. "You can't spend forever floating between worlds, cousin," she thought. "Eventually you'll need to decide where you want to belong." Life was so much harder, but potentially so much more fulfilling, when you found the courage to choose. The story of the old Vaden king, Nanhet, had taught Yasna something troubling. Often, the greatest threat to a ruling family was its own members. Why were so many of the old royal lines such knots of murder, greed, and infighting? And what made the few unique exceptions different? She'd grown adept at protecting her family against danger from without, carefully removing would-be deposers. But what could she do to protect it from within? In her absence already, the monarchy trembled. Her brother and her uncle, who she knew loved each other deeply, ground their wills against one another like mismatched gears. She would not have her family implode. If Alethkar was going to survive the desolation, they'd need committed leadership, a stable throne. She entered the library room and walked to her writing stand. It was in a position where she could survey the others and have her back to a wall. She unpacked her satchel, setting up two span reed boards. One of the reeds was blinking early, and she twisted the ruby, indicating she was ready. A message came back, writing out, "We will begin in 5 minutes." She passed the time scrutinizing the various groups in the room, reading the lips of those she could see, absently taking notes in shorthand. She moved from conversation to conversation, gleaning a little from each one, and noting the names of the people who spoke. "Tests confirm something is different here. Temperatures are distinctly lower on other nearby peaks of the same elevation. We have to assume that Bright Lord Colin is not going to return to the Faith. What then?"
"Don't know. Perhaps if we could find a way to conjoin the Fabrials, we could imitate this effect."
"The boy could be a powerful addition to our ranks. He shows interest in numerology, and asked me if we can truly predict events with it. I will speak with him again.
That last one was from the Storm Wardens. Yasna tightly pursed her lips.
Ivory, she whispered, I will watch them.
He left her side, shrunken to the size of a speck of dust. Yasna made a note to speak to Renarin. She would not have him wasting his time with a bunch of fools who thought they could foretell the future based on the curls of smoke from a snuffed candle. Finally, her span reed woke up. I have connected Jochi of Thelena and Ethid of Aesir for you, Brightness. Here are their passcodes. Further entries will be strictly their notations.
Excellent, Yasna wrote back, authenticating the two passcodes. Losing her span reeds in the sinking of the wind's pleasure had been a huge setback. She could no longer directly contact important colleagues or informants. Fortunately, Tashik was set up to deal with these kinds of situations. You could always buy new reeds connected to the Princedom's infamous information centers. You could reach anyone in practice, so long as you trusted an intermediary. Yasna had one of those she'd personally interviewed, and whom she paid good money to ensure confidentiality. The intermediary would burn her copies of this conversation afterward. The system was as secure as Yasna could make it, all things considered. Yasna's intermediary would now be joined by two others in Tashik. Together the three would be surrounded by six spanreed boards, one each for receiving comments from their masters, and one each to send back the entire conversation in real time, including the comments from the other two. That way, each conversant would be able to see a constant stream of comments without having to stop and wait before replying. Navani talked of ways to improve the experience, of span reads that could be adjusted to connect to different people. That was one area of scholarship, however, that Yasna did not have time to pursue. Her receiving board started to fill with notes written by her two colleagues.
Yasna, you live, Jochi wrote. Back from the dead, remarkable.
I can't believe you ever thought she was dead, Ethid replied.
Yasna Kolin? Lost at sea? Likelier we'd find the Stormfather dead.
Your confidence is comforting, Ethid, Yasna wrote on her sending board. A moment later, those words were copied by her scribe into the common spanreed conversation.
Are you at Yirithiru? Jochi wrote. When can I visit?
As soon as you're willing to let everyone know you aren't female, Yasna wrote back.
Jochi, known to the world as a dynamic woman of distinctive philosophy, was a pen name for a pot-bellied man in his 60s who ran a pastry shop in Thalen City.
Oh, I'm certain your wonderful city has need of pastries, Jochi wrote back jovially.
Can we please discuss your silliness later, Ethid wrote. I have news.
She was a scion, a kind of religious order of scribe, at the Aesish Royal Palace.
Well, stop wasting time, then, Jochi wrote. I love news. Goes excellently with a filled donut.
No, a fluffy brioche.
The news? Yasna just wrote, smiling.
These two had studied with her under the same master. They were Veristatalians of the keenest mind, regardless of how Jochi might seem.
I've been tracking a man we are increasingly certain is the Herald Naku, the judge, Ethid wrote. Nalan, as you call him.
Oh, are we sharing nursery tales now? Jochi asked. Heralds? Really, Ethid?
If you haven't noticed, Ethid wrote, the Voidbringers are back. Tales we dismissed are worth a second look now.
I agree, Yasna wrote. But what makes you think you found one of the heralds?
It's a combination of many things, she wrote. This man attacked our palace, Yasna. He tried to kill some thieves. The new prime is one of them, but keep that in your sleeve. We're doing what we can to play up his common roots while ignoring the fact that he was intent on robbing us.
Harold's alive and trying to kill people, Jochi wrote. And here I thought my news about a sighting of Axes the Collector was interesting.
There's more, Ethid wrote. Yes, now we've got a Radiant here. An Edge Dancer, or we had one.
Had one? Jochi wrote. Did you misplace her?
She ran off. She's just a kid, Yasna. Reshi, raised on the streets.
I think we may have met her, Yasna wrote. My uncle encountered someone interesting in one of his recent visions. I'm surprised you let her get away from you.
Have you ever tried to hold on to an Edge Dancer? Ethid wrote back. She chased after the Herald to Tashik. But the Prime says she is back now and avoiding me. In any case, something's wrong with the man I think is Nalan, Yasna. I don't think the Heralds will be a resource to us.
I will provide you with sketches of the Heralds, Yasna said. I have drawings of their true faces provided by an unexpected source. Ethid, you are right about them. They aren't going to be a resource. They're broken. Have you read the accounts of my uncle's visions?
I have copies somewhere, Ethid wrote. Are they real? Most sources agree that he's unwell.
He's quite well, I assure you, Yasna wrote. The visions are related to his Order of Radiance. I will send you the latest few. They have relevance to the Heralds.
Storms, Ethid wrote. The Blackthorn is actually a Radiant? Years of drought, and now they're popping up like rock buds.
Ethid did not think highly of men who earned their reputations through conquest, despite having made the study of such men a cornerstone of her research. The conversation continued for some time. Jochi, growing uncharacteristically solemn, spoke directly of the state of Thelena. It had been hit hard by the repeated coming of the Everstorm. Entire sections of Thalen's city were in ruin. Yasna was most interested in the Thalen Parshmen who had stolen the ships that had survived the storm. Their exodus, combined with Kaladin Stormblessed's interactions with the Parshmen in Alethkar, was painting a new picture of what and who the Voidbringers were. The conversation moved on as Ethid transcribed an interesting account she'd discovered in an old book discussing the desolations. From there, they spoke of the Dawn Chant translations, in particular some ardents in Yakaved who were ahead of the scholars at Karbranth. Yasna glanced through the library room, seeking out her mother, who was sitting near Shallan to discuss wedding preparations. Renarin still lurked at the far side of the room, mumbling to himself, or perhaps to his spren. She absently read his lips.
It's coming from in here, Renarin said. Somewhere in this room.
Yasna narrowed her eyes. Ethid, she wrote, weren't you going to try to construct drawings of the spren tied to each Order of Radiant?
I've gotten quite far, actually, she wrote back. I saw the Edge Dancer spren personally after demanding a glimpse.
What of the Truth Watchers? Yasna wrote.
Oh, I found a reference to those, Jochi wrote. The spren reportedly looked like light on a surface after it reflects through something crystalline.
Yasna thought for a moment, then briefly excused herself from the conversation. Jochi said he needed to go find a privy anyway. She slipped off her seat and crossed the room, passing near Navani and Shallan.
I don't want to push you at all, dear, Navani was saying. But in these uncertain times, surely you wish for stability?
Yasna stopped, free hand resting idly on Shallan's shoulder. The younger woman perked up, then followed Yasna's gaze toward Renarin.
What? Shallan whispered.
I don't know, Yasna said. Something odd.
Something about the way the youth was standing, the words he had spoken. He still looked wrong to her without his spectacles, like a different person entirely.
Yasna, Shallan said, suddenly tense. The doorway, look.
Yasna sucked in stormlight at the girl's tone and turned away from Renarin toward the room's doorway. There, a tall, square-jawed man had darkened the opening. He wore Sadius's colors, forest green and white. In fact, he was Sadius now, at least its regent. Yasna would always know him as Meridas Amaram.
"What's he doing here?"
Shallan hissed.
"He's a high prince," Navani said. "The soldiers aren't going to forbid him without a direct command."
Amaram fixated on Yasna with regal, light tan eyes. He strode toward her, exuding confidence. Or was it conceit?
"Yasna," he said when he drew close. "I was told I could find you here."
"Remind me to find whoever told you," Yasna said, "and have them hanged."
Amaram stiffened.
"Could we speak together more privately, just for a moment?"
"I think not."
"We need to discuss your uncle. The rift between our houses serves nobody. I wish to bridge that chasm, and Dalinar listens to you. Please, Yasna, you can steer him properly."
"My uncle knows his own mind on these matters and doesn't require me to steer him."
"As if you haven't been doing so already, Yasna. Everyone can see that he has started to share your religious beliefs."
"Which would be incredible since I don't have religious beliefs." Amaram sighed, looking around.
"Please," he said. "Private?"
"Not a chance, Meridas."
"Go away. We were close once."
"My father wished us to be close. Do not mistake his fancies for fact."
"Yasna,
you really should leave before somebody gets hurt." He ignored her suggestion, glancing at Navani and Shallan, then stepping closer.
"We thought you were dead. I needed to see for myself that you are well."
"You have seen. Now leave." Instead, he gripped her forearm.
"Why, Yasna? Why have you always denied me?"
"Other than the fact that you are a detestable buffoon who achieves only the lowest level of mediocrity, as it is the best your limited mind can imagine, I can't possibly think of a reason."
"Mediocre," Amaram growled. "You insult my mother, Yasna. You know how hard she worked to raise me to be the best soldier this kingdom has ever known."
"Yes. From what I understand, she spent the 7 months she was with child entertaining each and every military man she could find in the hopes that something of them would stick to you." Meridas's eyes widened, and his face flushed deeply. To their side, Shallan audibly gasped.
"You godless whore,"
Amaram hissed, releasing her.
"If you weren't a woman..."
"If I weren't a woman, I suspect we wouldn't be having this conversation. Unless I were a pig. Then you'd be doubly interested."
He thrust his hand to the side, stepping back, preparing to summon his blade. Yasna smiled, holding her free hand toward him, letting stormlight curl and rise from it.
"Oh, please do, Meridas. Give me an excuse, I dare you."
He stared at her hand.
The entire room had gone silent, of course. He'd forced her to make a spectacle. His eyes flicked up to meet hers. Then he spun and stalked from the room, shoulders hunched as if trying to shrug away the eyes and the snickers of the scholars.
"He will be trouble," Yasna thought, "even more than he has been."
Amaram genuinely thought he was Alethkar's only hope and salvation, and had a keen desire to prove it. Left alone, he'd rip the armies apart to justify his inflated opinion of himself. She'd speak with Dalinar. Perhaps the two of them could devise something to keep Amaram safely occupied. And if that didn't work, she wouldn't speak to Dalinar about the other precautions she would take. She'd been out of touch for a long time, but she was confident there would be assassins for hire here, ones who knew her reputation for discretion and excellent pay.
A high-pitched sound came from beside her, and Yasna glanced to find Shallan sitting perkily on her seat, making an excited noise in the back of her throat and clapping her hands together quickly, the sound muffled by her clothed safe hand.
Wonderful.
Mother, Yasna said, might I speak for a moment with my ward? Navani nodded, her eyes lingering on the doorway where Amram had exited. Once she'd pushed for the union between them. Yasna didn't blame her. The truth of Amram was difficult to see, and had been even more so in the past, when he'd been close to Yasna's father. Navani withdrew, leaving Shallan alone at the table stacked with reports.
Brightness, Shallan said as Yasna sat. That was incredible!
I let myself be pushed into abundant emotion.
You were so clever!
And yet my first insult was not to attack him, but the moral reputation of his female relative. Clever? Or simply the use of an obvious bludgeon?
Well,
regardless, Yasna cut in, wishing to avoid further conversation about Amram. I've been thinking about your training. Shallan stiffened immediately.
I've been very busy, Brightness. However, I'm sure I'll be able to get to those books you assigned me very soon.
Yasna rubbed her forehead.
This girl.
Brightness, Shallan said. I think I might have to request a leave from my studies.
Shallan spoke so quickly, the words ran into one another.
His Majesty says he needs me to go with him on the expedition to Kolinar.
Yasna frowned.
Kolinar?
Nonsense. They'll have the Windrunner with them. Why do they need you?
The king is worried they might need to sneak into the city,
Shallan said.
Or even through the middle of it, if it's occupied. We can't know how far the siege has progressed. If Elokar has to reach the Oath Gate without being recognized, then my illusions will be invaluable. I have to go. It's so inconvenient. I'm sorry.
She took a deep breath, eyes wide, as if afraid that Yasna would snap at her.
This girl.
I'll speak with Elokar, Yasna said. I feel that might be extreme. For now, I want you to do drawings of Renarin's and Kaladin's spren, for scholarly reasons. Bring them to me. She trailed off.
What is he doing?
Renarin stood near the far wall, which was covered in palm-sized tiles. He tapped a specific one and somehow made it pop out, like a drawer. Yasna stood, throwing back her chair. She strode across the room, Shallan scampering along behind her. Renarin glanced at them, then held up what he'd found in the small drawer. A ruby, long as Yasna's thumb, cut into a strange shape with holes drilled in it.
What on Roshar?
She took it from him and held it up.
What is it?
Navani said, shouldering up beside her.
A fabrial?
No metal parts. What is that shape? Yasna reluctantly surrendered it to her mother.
So many imperfections in the cut, Navani said. That will cause it to lose stormlight quickly. It won't even hold a charge for a day, I bet.
And it will vibrate something fierce.
Curious.
Yasna touched it, infusing the gemstone with stormlight. It started glowing, but not nearly as brightly as it should have. Navani was, of course, right. It vibrated as stormlight curled off it. Why would anyone spoil a gem with such a twisted cut? And why hide it? The small drawer was latched with a spring, but she couldn't see how Renarin had gotten it undone.
Storms, Shallan whispered as other scholars crowded around. That's a pattern.
A pattern?
Buzzes in sequence, Shallan said. My spren says he thinks this is a code.
Letters?
Music of language, Renarin whispered.
He drew in stormlight from some spheres in his pocket, then turned and pressed his hands against the wall,
sending a surge of stormlight through it that extended from his palms like twin ripples on the surface of a pond. Drawers slid open, one behind each white tile. 100, 200, each revealing gemstones inside. The library had decayed, but the ancient radiance had obviously anticipated that. They'd found another way to pass on their knowledge.